This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Welcome to the Dreamers Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Pardo, and today I am interviewing Paul Blaze, who is living his dream through entrepreneurship. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hey, thanks for having me, Joe. Really happy to be here with you, bro.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to have you here, too. It's quite awesome how we ran into each other.
Yeah.
Could you start by giving some background about yourself?
I grew up in San Diego County, North San Diego County Vista, surfer type person, and always a bit of an entrepreneur. I always had kind of some kind of business going on that I was either running or doing. And they were all small commodity type businesses. And they were seasonal that I would do. I had a window cleaning business that I did way back in the day. I had Christmas tree lots that I ran that were, I'll tell you what, you can make some serious, back in the day, you can make some serious cash on Christmas tree lots or pumpkin lots and things like that. Window painting businesses. And then, so the point is that they were all small commodity type businesses, things that were, it was a dollar for an item. Later on in life, I got into electrical contracting. And because I'd been an electrician for a while, I figured I needed to learn how to do something a little bit more sustainable and not quite as seasonal, something that'd be more year round. So I learned a trade and then started to specifically become a contractor. And then that branched out to doing just a variety of different types of things in that field that were interrelated. So security systems, home theater systems, lighting design, electrical designs for houses, commercial buildings. And because of what I did, I was a very specialized electrician in the sense that I could do, I do amazing custom homes. Some of the nicest houses in America I've been involved in wiring. And then specifically in my county, you know, when I moved up here to, now I live in Vancouver, Washington, which is just north of Portland, Oregon. I've had the privilege of being able to wire and design some of the nicest houses in our area. These are not the nicest in America. These are just the nicest in my town. But that's been kind of my niche. About a year and a half ago, in February of 2013, I was diagnosed with cancer, bladder cancer specifically, and it was quite a shock. I always had this dream that I wanted to be a writer and a speaker, and I always put it off. I always had a plan to someday get to it, but never quite got to it. In fact, that February or January, I had just come up with a new business plan that I was going to be implementing, where I was going to bolster up a specific part of my business, which I had divided my company up into three categories: commercial, residential, and then technology. Then the technology part had been divided up again into two different categories: the glitz, which was all the bling, home theater, whole house audio, that type of stuff, and then also the security monitoring and security systems. Security monitoring, there is so much money in that because it's recurring revenue. You get somebody to subscribe to your business, to monitoring. And, you know, you have basically an 11-year contract that most people sign up for. And so, and the amount, it's pure profit. It's ridiculous how much money that ADT makes or Brinks or whatever. It's just ridiculous. And so, because the overhead is so minimal, because most systems are so bulletproof, hardly ever have any problems. And so you end up collecting about $30 to $35 a month with an overhead of about $10 is what it costs to run that part of it. So you have a $20 to $25 of profit margin on security systems. So I was going to build it up. When you sell a security system, like once I own the system, the monitoring, I can turn around and sell that system to like Protection One or another monitoring company, and you sell it for 3 years worth of the monthly income. 36 months is what you sell it for. So if I have a customer that has a cost of $30 a month, that thing is now worth $900 to sell to someone else. Or it's actually more, it's like $1,100 is where it comes out to be. But, you know, I could turn around and sell it for that much. So my plan was to bolster that up to about a point where I could sell it for about $1 million, and then I'd have my money, and then I would go on and do writing and speaking, and that'd be the rest of my life. But then I was diagnosed with cancer and realized that I may not live that long, and so I had to do something differently. So I started thinking, Joe, about coming up with a new plan, and one of the things that I decided was I was going to start a podcast where I'm going to accomplish one of my dreams, which is being a speaker. And that's what, you know, one of the things about podcasting is that I'm speaking to people and encouraging people that way. And then also the other thing is I get to talk about things that I'm passionate about, like business. So I started a podcast called Doubt the Doubts. And part of that does have a bit of a business plan to it, but it also has more of a change the world plan to it, of where I'm trying to encourage people to say I can do it through hearing the stories. And the show's doing phenomenally well. You know, it's just rocking and rolling now. It's taken off. And then I've got another podcast called The Potter's Cast that combines both my passion for entrepreneurs and business with my love of pottery, which I happen to do that as a hobby. So, and I, you know, I'd sell my stuff as like, just as for fun on the side. I'll never make that a business, you know, but I've done it as a hobby. It's paid for itself. Let's just say that. But now the podcast is doing ridiculously well. I mean, you're in the whole thing, Joe, of caring about how many downloads you get. And so, you and I were talking beforehand that, you know, the average podcast gets about 109 downloads per episode. That's the average podcast. My Potter's Cast show is getting 600 downloads a day. And it's just scratching such a niche little show. It is kind of reaching a special community that really needs that encouragement of not just, you know, they want to hear the stories of other potters, but also they want to hear, how do I make money from this? Because most potters are like any artist out there. They're super brilliant at what they do for creativity, but they're not real creative in how they make the money out of it. You know, like, how do you get to the next step? And it's not because they're not smart or not intelligent. It's just because they haven't learned those skills. And so part of the show is like trying to encourage people to do that. So that's a bit of my background. I kind of started talking, and I think for like the last 8 minutes or so, I haven't stopped. So, but does that give you enough background there, Joe?
That is a pretty extensive background. I'm very sorry to hear about your cancer. How have you been doing with that?
Well, you know, thanks for asking about that, Joe. It is a very scary process, to be completely honest. I have no idea what my future holds. I live my life now in 3-month increments. When I was first diagnosed, I had no idea what bladder cancer meant. I just knew what the symptoms looked like. And when it was diagnosed, in fact, you're going to be playing a song. I'm not sure exactly how the song, how you implement it, but from the band Fun, which is the song Carry On, they were scoping my bladder. They had taken a scope, and there's only one pathway into the bladder. So they kind of stuck it up that way. And when that camera entered in my bladder, I was watching a video screen on the progress, which was quite uncomfortable. But when it entered into my bladder, and there was a massive, massive tumor in there that was about the size of an orange. And the idea popped in my head that I have cancer. And it wasn't like what the doctor said, because I said it immediately. And then my doctor said, oh, you have cancer. He had the voice of a professional. He'd seen it 100 times. He'd said it 100 times. I had seen it one time. And I said it for the first time in my own brain. Was more of like a child crying, trying to find a place to hide from the boogeyman. It's a horrible, horrible experience to realize that you have cancer. It turns out that it's very malignant. It's very dangerous. It's the most recurring cancer that is out there. I don't fit any of the profiles for it. I'm too young for it. Usually got the average age is like 73. The average person to contract it, this type, or to get this kind of cancer, is a smoker. It's a smoker's cancer. I don't smoke. In fact, I've lived my life in a way that I've always felt I don't deserve this, because I don't make the bad choices for it. In fact, I could look across the world and find plenty of other people that I would totally think would be justifiable to pass my cancer on from me to them, because I feel like there's some culling that needs in this planet, you know, certain people that need to disappear off the planet, like child molesters or rapists or people that have that kind of evil bent in their soul. So I feel like I've never made those choices that be the touchstone of I could say, oh, because I was a smoker, this is what's caused the problem. Now, I don't wish this on any smokers, for sure, because there's plenty of great people that happen to be smokers, you know. But anyhow, so that right after I had those words pop in my head, I have cancer. There's one line popped in my head, which is from that song from Fun, was Carry On. And it reminded me of a talk from a person that I really respect. Her name is Elizabeth Elliot. Her husband had been killed years and years and years ago by a tribe of a people group he was trying to reach to bring hope to them and a new life, and they killed him. And when she was really young, she was out in the jungles. Her husband had just died. I think she had two or three children at the time, and she had no idea what it meant to live a life without her husband, Jim Elliot. And she was so devastated by it. And the only thing she could do was when she explained the story, was to do the next thing. She couldn't think of a lifetime spent without Jim. She couldn't think of what the next month would look like without Jim. She couldn't think of what it was going to be like to be a single mom raising children without Jim. And so all she could do at that point was to say, is do the next thing. So that song came into my head, said just the line, carry on, you know, carry on. I just loved that line. And it just flashed, and then it was gone. And then the next thought was, just do the next thing. I couldn't imagine what it was like to live a life with cancer, or to think that my children were going to be living without a dad, or that my wife would get to the gray years and not have a husband to hold her hand. I couldn't imagine that. And it was too much for me. So all I could do was say, I can just do the next thing. And so I did the next thing. I went through the surgery. They removed the tumor. Within just a short period of time, they did a new exam. The cancer was back. And I was devastated. And I had no idea what to do again. And so it was just do the next thing. I went through another surgery. I went through treatment. Did all the right stuff. My next thing was, I've got to do something where my body doesn't have to be there to earn a living, which is being an electrical contractor. Your body has to be available. So I decided, well, one of the next things, I'm going to start a podcast where I can, one, accomplish my dream of encouraging people and helping them make a positive impact in the world, and hopefully turn that into a business. I'm on the cusp of that right now. But that was my next thing. I just did the next thing. In September, I went in for my next exam, and the cancer had come back again for a third time, and I was devastated, and I was pissed off. I was so angry. I thought, I am not going to let cancer kick me like this. I went through surgery again, went through treatments. Man, I knuckled down and I worked my butt off, and I said, I'm going to make something happen. And I just started doing the next thing again. I couldn't worry about what the future held. I just kept doing the next thing as best I could. But the next exam was coming up, which was going to be in March of this last month, this last March. And when I was first diagnosed, my doctor had said, I said, what if we can't get in front of this? What if we can't get rid of this? I knew the statistics at that point. It's the highest recurring cancer. The life expectancy, if it spreads, is really low. And it's got an 80% to 93% chance of, or an 83 to 97% chance of coming back. So I was really becoming despondent. I used to have a daily, Doubt the Doubts was a daily show, bro. I'm telling you, I did it every single day. 7 days a week, I was putting out a 30 to 40 minute podcast. I've got 200 today, was episode 205. So I've put out a lot of podcasts. At that point, I was so despondent. I thought, man, I'm down in my last 6 months, because he told me I've got a year and a half, 18 months if I can't get in front of it. I've already experienced that I couldn't get in front of it. March was rolling around. My next deal was supposed to be that I was supposed to be examined one more time. And when I went in, I asked my doctor, I said, what do you think my chances are? And here's an exact quote that my doctor said to me, Joe. He said, looked me square in the eye, and he said, Paul, I don't have a whole lot of hope for you. And neither did I. I was giving up on life. I thought, oh, I'm winding down the last 6 months of my life. And I just was, I was, almost resolved to saying, well, I guess this is it. And then when they examined me, there was no evidence of cancer. I was so stoked. I was like, dude, I might see 2015. I feel pretty confident about that. And it totally reinvigorated me. You know, where the business idea of the podcast had kind of fallen to the wayside. It went down to 3 days a week, down to 2 days a week. And then I skipped a week, 2 weeks. I was just like, I just felt like I had no hope. And when I came out of that room and I had no evidence, I thought, I have hope. I might live to see 2015. In fact, I feel pretty confident about 2015. I don't know about 2016, to be completely honest. My chances are still very high for recurrence. It's still 80 to a 97% chance of coming back still. But I finally have hope that I might be in that 7 to 20% bracket that gets to dodge the bullet. I have hope again. So that's when I started then my other podcast. I said, well, I'm going to go after my next dream. I ramped back up on Doubt the Doubts, and I started the Potter's Cast, and I have hope, dude. Now, I've got 3 weeks until my next exam. I say I live my life in three-month increments because I have to be examined every 3 months because it is so aggressive and dangerous. And so my next exam is on July 17th. So I'm not sure when this show is coming out, but if it's before that, if your listeners could be praying for me and my family, I would really appreciate it. So long answer to the question, how am I doing? For the next 3 weeks, I feel like I'm doing okay.
Well, I mean, this show will probably air about a month from now, but I would love to do a follow-up, you know, in a couple months and just check in and see how you're doing.
Yeah.
I guess all we can be is happy.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't know what it's like to live my life quarter to quarter, you know, on money terms, let alone on life terms.
Oh, money terms have been brutal, bro. I've been off work for 9 months and trying to fight cancer. You know, it just take 9 months out of anyone's salary. It's devastating. Everything is gone. You know, I don't even know how we've held onto our house except for the grace of God and the goodness of my friends. I mean, literally, I have no idea how it's happened. We've just been every single time it comes time for mortgage to be paid, it's like, We've been able to pull it off. Doesn't mean we're going to pull off all the other bills, but you know, the important ones, life insurance, health insurance, and mortgages are my priorities. Everything else is like, you don't really matter. If I die, I will owe you nothing. So we'll see if I survive this first before we pay you off. So, but anyhow, yeah, three-month increments. You know, it's a good perspective. For one, it makes the urgency of today. The urgency of now is very significant. Because we can always say tomorrow. One of my guests on my show is Sean Ogle. I can't remember his last name, and I apologize to Sean for that. But he said this great line that I've not changed, or I've not been able to shake free from my brain. He said, there are 7 days in the week, and someday is not one of them. And I've spent my life thinking, someday I'm going to do this, someday I'm going to do that. When you know you only have three-month increments that you can count on, it makes you consider that right now is pretty significant. Right now is really significant to spend time with my wife and love her with everything I have. Right now is significant to be able to spend time with my children and love them with everything I have. Right now is significant to be able to spend time with you, Joe, and love you with everything that I have as best that I'm able to. Because this is what matters is who I'm spending time with right now. Because someday may not happen, may never happen. I may not see you at Podcast Movement this summer, even though I've got, you know, I've been invited. I've been invited to be involved in it. I just don't know if I'll be able to make it. Finances, the medical. My exam's in July. Podcast Movement is 1 month later. I may have to be, you know, recovering from some crazy surgery during that time. We just don't know. So I can love right now, this moment, but it's really hard. It's hard, one, not to look in the back in the past and be bummed about things I didn't do. It's hard to look into the future and think about the things that I really want to do. And some of those things are super, super precious things, like, you know, walking my daughter down the aisle or being there when my son is in his 30s and he's looking for business advice or just advice in life, and having a phone call that that I'm just, you know, a phone call away. And I'm looking, I want to get to those places. I want to be able to go through 1,000 more fights with my wife and 1,000 more kisses. I want to go through all those things. Those things are very, very precious to me. And we just don't know for sure. So the now has become very, very significant. So yeah, 3 month increments. That's kind of the way we live our life right now. It's almost a gift, bro. It's almost a gift because I don't have to try to keep pulling that deception of tomorrow, because tomorrow is like a companion of today, right? Tomorrow is a companion of today. And so I can always say, oh, I'll just do it tomorrow. It's just that basically it's within an arm's length, but it never quite comes when you say, I'll do it tomorrow. But if you can take massive action today, you don't have to worry about doing it tomorrow. It's already done. You know what I'm saying? So it makes a huge difference if you take massive action today in everything, in loving your wife, loving your kids, loving your friends, loving your mission, loving your calling, loving your work. So yeah, it's a blessing.
I gotta be honest, I don't know how to continue on the interview after all of this. I mean, it's so inspiring, and it's happy and sad at the same time. It's life.
I'll tell you a secret for doing an interview. Just do the next thing.
Well, you know, I don't want to ever be accused of being cold.
It's all good. You won't be cold, bro.
So, not with a little bit of wetness coming out. So what does entrepreneurship mean to you?
Well, it means that you have taken the middleman out of your source of income. Everybody really is an entrepreneur. There is no getting around that. You can't escape that unless you're mentally deficient. You know, that there's a mental problem, and I get that. I understand that there's people like that. But everybody is an entrepreneur. The difference is that to what extent or to what level will we take it to? So I can either sell my time, I can go work for somebody and exchange my time for their cash. We all need money to live, right? And so we have to come up with an enterprising way to get money from someone else's pocket into my pocket. And it's not, and let me just clarify that. I'm not saying that there is a limited amount of money out there and it's just whoever can grab the most from the most people wins. That's not what I think. That money is something that is created that people can access. And the economy is always growing because it's like a garden. You can plant and something's going to come up. So, but everybody is trying to get money. That's the main goal of an entrepreneur, of everybody, I should say. We all have that addiction, is cash. So how do we go about getting it? So we either go hire ourselves out and someone else gets the work and creates it for us, the product, and then we go and we help them fulfill their dreams. And we then take that money, the fruits of that, and we put in our pocket. We know that that's probably going to be a set amount of money. So everybody is trying to get this cash. So you can have the middleman called a boss, or you can get rid of the middleman and you can have what's called a client then, or a customer. Either which way, it's entrepreneurship. One of them is easier because you're going out and finding someone else to do the harder part, which is finding the client and the customer, or you can become the guy that goes out and finds the client and the customer. So entrepreneurship is just a matter of finding the resources to be able to get money into your own pocket to be able to create the wealth for yourself. So like I said, two ways to do it. You can have someone else creating it for you, or you can do it for yourself. But one way or another, you are selling yourself. You're either selling your soul, your time, selling your soul. You're either selling your, that may be Freudian slip there. You'd be selling your time and your talents to someone else, or you're going to sell your time and your talents to yourself and create the stream of income for yourself without the middleman of a boss. So to become, in a truer sense of the word, a true entrepreneur is a person who has gotten rid of the middleman and now they are their own boss. I should say they're their own source of income, because the next boss that we have is really our customer or client. That's our new boss. So I think that'd be like the long way of answering a short question.
Well, even if you have a boss, the boss, it's a vicious cycle where the clients are still their boss, you know, and yes. Then it starts the whole cycle a business starts over again. So just because your boss is a boss doesn't mean that they have no boss. Their boss is the clients. And I think a lot of people don't understand that concept, unfortunately. And if more people did, they would understand that owning your own business is not easy.
Owning your own business is, it's very difficult. Someone put it this way, is that an entrepreneur is someone who will work 100 hours for himself, but he would never work 40 hours for someone else doing the same thing. So yeah, you put in a lot of hours. Dude, I put tons of hours into all of my businesses. When there was a point where as a contractor, I would get up at 3 a.m, I'd be at work by 3 a.m, and I'd work to about 10 o'clock at night, 6 days a week for a year straight. Now, you could not get an employee to do that. There's no way that I would have been hired by anybody to work those kind of hours, but I could do it for myself because I had to. It's just what I had to do. I had no choice in the matter. An employee has a choice. Now, there's nothing wrong with being an employee either. Some people don't have that drive. They don't have the hustle muscle, or they've never worked out that hustle muscle. Even today, I still work at 10 hours, man. If my own businesses, I'm running multiple businesses, man. I put hours in, dude. I put hours in. There's a hustle that I've got to put in to be able to make a living. Especially when you consider there was 9 months of the year that I was off work. Man, talk about hustle. You don't know debt until you've gone a year without, you know, 3/4 of a year without an income. Man, that's going to take some hustle to get that taken care of.
What would you say inspires you?
Well, I think I've touched on a few of those. One of them, quite readily, is my children and my wife. They're a huge inspiration for getting up and moving. I want to provide a college education for both my children. So that's definitely an inspiration. Another inspiration is my own stomach. I've really grown used to eating, and I really want to continue that process in the future. So that's an inspiration. And then also the next thing that's an inspiration are people that I love in general, like people in general. I have always been a passionate person for people. I love people. I love to hang out with them, talk with them. And if I see an opportunity where I can help to encourage someone or to point them in a direction that would better their life, dude, I'm on it. I feel like I may have the gift of know-it-allness. I've been around being an entrepreneur. I've been around the business world for decades. And so I feel like I've learned a lot. But also the thing is not only am I a know-it-all, but also I figure everybody else is a know-it-all. And so I'm going to try to learn from them as best I can. So it's huge inspiration to try to do something that I can encourage someone else. But in the process, I know that while I'm encouraging them, I'm going to learn so much. In fact, this last month, there's a buddy of mine. He and I were having a conversation, and he was asking questions about a specific topic about entrepreneurship, specifically social media. And I was giving him some suggestions, and he gave me one piece of information that totally changed the way I think about a certain marketing strategy that I use. And it completely turned my brain upside down. I was like, wow, I can't believe it. And then when I implemented it, it's like, yeah, this is like crazy. This is totally working. It totally changed what was the way I was going about things. So yeah, it becomes a twofold thing. You know, when you're trying to give to someone else, man, you get back so much on the other side of it. And so that's a huge inspiration, is working with people, encouraging people, because it turns out to be that. Lastly, I'd say another huge inspiration is understanding the brevity of now. And like I said earlier, that there is a big part of me that really believes in just that today is the day. I don't know, there's some things I put off till tomorrow, like, you know, weeding or raking. There's some things like that I put off. But there's other things that I feel like, oh, this is too important. I've got a big mission. So it's an inspiration to have now.
Would you mind sharing what your friend shared with you?
Yeah, we were just talking about strategies on... Yeah, the strategy that we were talking about was how to market. And some of the marketing tactics that I've been using have not been quite as effective. And I just changed from one marketing source to the next. And I've just put more emphasis, instead of waiting for customers, I'm going out and grabbing customers now. in a positive way. And it's just a matter of, it's the mindset switch is what I'm talking about. One mindset is that you're waiting for people to come to you. The other mindset is saying, I'm going out and finding them, and I'm going to capture them as a customer, as a client. And it's totally effective. So yeah, it's just a mindset switch. And that was the thing that he had kind of just said it in passing. And I was like, dude, that is so true. I mean, I've had a company that I went out initially when I wanted to start one of my companies. I spent 2 weeks looking for customers, and then I spent 40 hours a week looking for customers. Then I spent 80 hours a week trying to keep up with the customers that I found, and I stopped having to look because it was just. I mean, let me say something that's going to sound very arrogant, and I don't mean it this way. It's just a reality. I was just too good for what the normal was. I was giving way too much what the normal company was giving. And so the success was enormous because I was giving away too much. So I didn't have to go out looking for customers anymore because I brought so much to the table. The customers were clamoring to come to my door. So it was the mindset shift, is that with the new approach, is that instead of waiting for them to come to me or maintaining what I have, the mindset shift is I'm going out and grabbing the customers. Gary Vaynerchuk put it this way. I was researching a particular subject, which is, you know, how to get sponsors for a podcast. And he said, the way you do it, and he's looking into the camera, he puts his hand in front of the camera. He says, you go out and you grab your customers, or you grab your sponsors. I was like, dude, that rocks. That's what it takes. You've got to have a polite aggressiveness about growth. So there you go.
Growing up, how did your family receive your entrepreneurship?
Well, that's a great question. I don't think there's any formula about what kind of family an entrepreneur comes from, because it is so diversified. I've talked to over 200 and some odd entrepreneurs with Doubt the Doubts. And what I would say is that there is no formula. I read an article once about how to become as successful as Bill Gates. And the article said, number one, choose the right grandparents. And then it went on to talk about how his grandparents have been such a huge influence in his life. He says, after you've chosen the right grandparents, now choose the right parents. And then it talked about how his parents made a big impact in his life. So it makes you walked away from this article going, man, there's no hope for me because I didn't choose the right grandparents. In fact, none of us get to choose those things, right? And it was very tongue-in-cheek. What it comes down to is that family lineage does not dictate entrepreneurial success. It can be a help, but it is not the deciding factor. So let me put it this way. My family has been very self-sufficient, a bit on the go-getter side. My mom right now has maybe worked a total of, in her entire adult life, maybe a total of 2 years as an adult. She's a property owner. She owns her own house. She owns rental properties, and she has a pretty decent income. But she's been a hustler her whole life too. She's when I say that she's never really worked that much as an adult, she has worked her entire adult life. For one, she was a parent, a mom. Moms worked their butts off. And then secondly, she always had like either a pumpkin lot, or she did Christmas trees with me, or she painted windows at Christmas time, or she was always making something to sell, and she was just a go-getter. So my family's always been kind of, my dad, on the other hand, he's a government worker, and he was completely content with going to work for the government and have a very secure type future. And yeah, so two different approaches from both parents, you know. Real one's a hustler, one's a very much a maintainer. My dad is a very much a maintenance guy. I'd say that in general has been very supportive.
Yeah, I mean, a supportive family is always very important. I think that's more important than who they are,
right?
You know, by last name or association. So, was there any roadblocks outside of your cancer that you've hit along the way, and how did you overcome them?
Dude, there's roadblocks every single day. It's called the alarm clock. You know, it's getting out of bed is a roadblock, you know, on some days. So, I would say my biggest roadblock is myself. I've been my biggest roadblock to any type of success. It's never been because of some exterior thing. Yeah, there's challenges, but I've always been my biggest enemy. in getting things done, you know, whether it's, you know, whether it's like saying I'll do it tomorrow, or I've got some kind of excuse, like I don't have this type of a skill, or if only I had done things differently, you know, those things always come into the head. So yeah, there's roadblocks, but there's also ways to work around them. And part of it is learning the secret of that. You know, if you've got an area that you're not strong in, well, then probably the smarter thing to do is to get someone else to do that for you. You know, it may be that you just ask someone to volunteer for you for a little while. I've had people volunteer to do tons and tons of work for me as volunteers. So, you know, and then there's other people that I've spent tons and tons of money because I've also hired them to be able to do the work for me that I didn't have the time for. So, you know, the roadblocks typically, bro, has always been something that has been internal in me, as opposed to something external. You know, cancer is not necessarily a roadblock. For me, it's a springboard right now. I mean, eventually it might be the ultimate roadblock, but you know, for right now I've used it as a springboard and as a prod. There's been other times when I've been very discouraged. I mean, as I already told you, I was really discouraged in March. I had become basically resigned. When I saw that there was a little bit more hope and there was some a light, and you know, the door was kind of cracked open and I saw some light on the other side of that door, I thought, oh, I have a doorway that I can go through now. So, but the problem was that there was something inside of me, not just the cancer that was in me, but it was a mental block. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, the mental blocks, whether it's depression or anything that we create in our own minds is definitely some of the biggest blocks that we hit along our path. Could you share a favorite memory?
One of my favorite memories has this is going to be a recent one. It has more to do with the impact that I feel like I've been able to make. Came to one of my buddies, David Ralph, who's got a podcast called Join Up Dots, and I was interviewed for his show. He got a letter from someone. She wrote and said, "You have a great ability to relax your guests so that they share, and Paul did not disappoint. Wow, what he's been through and what he is going through. I love when you spoke of your mental picture of him with the machete cutting down a path, and his dude comment back to you when you spoke of his turning around to see the people following him. You could just tell how much that picture and what it symbolized." Then she went on to say that she took notes. She said, "So my favorites, that the favorite quotes from the show were," and she wrote them down, and she put them down of all the things that I said. And then she finished this up saying, "I also loved his honest sharing of his cancer path. My husband had a malignant melanoma. And even though I've been in the journey with Rob, my husband, something in the way Paul shared made me realize I probably have very little real idea what it's to go through my mind, as opposed to someone who has cancer and is a constant possible impending doom." Then she says, "I'm forwarding this podcast to Rob," her husband. The point is that she got something so out of it that she wrote notes and she put them all down, and she is spreading the word as a result of it. And the things that she wrote down to me is so precious that she wrote them down and put them in her file of things to say, "I'm going to remember this because these are too precious." To me, that's my favorite memory, is knowing when someone has been so impacted by something that I've said or something my guests have said that the ideas are being spread. So yeah, those are my favorites. I just absolutely love that.
That is a very nice memory, and it's nice to know that you're being noted for the work that you're doing. So I know that we talked about how you live quarter to quarter, but what do your dreams for the future look like?
Well, my dream right now is, within the next month, I would like to be full-time and really close to shutting down my electrical business. That's my short-term goals. I don't have a lot of long-term goals right now. I'm just looking, again, like I said, in the next 3 months. And then if I can do that, I've got a pretty aggressive plan for being able to pull that off, that especially now that the show is really doing well, that it's just a matter of sheer numbers. You know, you have to have so many numbers to be able to sell sponsorships. And so that's my next goal, is to be able to sell enough sponsorships and get the rest of this quarter sold out, and then the third quarter sold out for sponsorships. So that's my next goal, is to be 100% online. That way, if my body is not going to agree with me on July 17th, I can keep on moving forward with a business that's viable.
So before we get going, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Hey, you don't have tomorrow. You've got today. So do something today that is beautiful and makes a difference in the world.
Very nice. Very concise. Well, I'd like to plug all your websites and your Facebook pages, your Twitters, so we can also get them in the show notes.
Yeah, so the way that people can get in touch with me is probably the best place. It's going to be one of two places. One is through doubtthedoubts.com, and that's doubt the doubts, plural on the second doubt there, .com. And there's a contact page there. There's also the Potter's Cast, which is the show that I have for ceramics. That's a good place. You can follow me on Twitter, which is at PDBLAIS, PD Blaze. That's PD is short for Paul David. And then my last name is Blaze, BLAIS. Sounds like Blaze, like a fire, but it's spelled IS on the end instead of ZE. I'm also on Instagram, which is where I kind of post some of the artistic stuff that I do, which is the same thing. It's PD Blaze. Facebook is, you could just look up Doubt the Doubts or the Potter's Cast, and I'm on both of those places. So that's about it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. And I definitely would like to follow up with you soon and find out how you're making out. And hopefully you'll be self-sufficient in the podcasting world online, and everything will be going well for you.
Nice. I'd love to come back anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Paul. I really appreciate it.
Hey, lots of love to you, bro.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.